thank God for being able to be together today. We're grateful for all that are here, some that are visiting with us again today. Heard a little bit more about Brad's accident last night. I'm sure thankful that's not worse than it could have been. Wow. I think I figured something out. I think there are some folks that would really like to have a community church to be a part of, where the worship's exciting, vibrant, upbeat, positive, and they'd like to do that with a small group in their living room, in an intimate setting in which there is a close sense of camaraderie and fellowship and feeling among the people that are together. And I realize as I say that, you're thinking, Lee, that's kind of hard to pull off. And you're right. There's folks who want to do church differently. There are folks who are tired of the old-time religion of their fathers. One group's response to that in Nashville is to have larger meetings on Sunday, and then to arrange for smaller groups from 8 to 12 people meeting all over the city of Nashville during the week. Let me tell you before I look at some concerns that I have that the sermon next Sunday morning, God permitting, will be encouraging us to think about some things I think can be learned from some of the changes that some would like to enact even among churches of Christ. I'm not talking about something today that simply takes place among those in the denominations, but there are some attitudes even among Christians that I'm trying to help us see through some of that and think a little bit about how do we work some of these questions out that people are having. You go on a website of this particular group that's having the larger gatherings on Sunday and smaller groups meeting in homes during the week. Our Sunday worship gatherings are laid back. Christ exalting time of worship, Bible study, communion, and prayer. We invite you to come a few minutes early, grab a cup of coffee, and make yourself at home. And all of that just sounds comfortable. And I will tell you that I can understand the enticing part of some of that. I enjoy meeting in homes. I enjoy the closeness of singing together and studying together. Someone here even made a comment a while back, and a handful of us were sitting down to study, and that it just had a different feel to it because he felt like he could ask questions and make comments in a study like that that he might not make in a larger class setting here. More formal, wanting maybe perhaps more of an informal setting. I suggest to you that there's a problem with that thinking, and the problem may be I wish we could have Bible classes in which people would feel more free to express some thoughts from their own studies. I don't want to turn it into a free-for-all, but we need to be able to address questions people have. For some people, the answer seems to be, let's get out of these old traditional church buildings and church settings, and let's get people sitting in a more intimate arrangement, maybe even sitting somehow in a circle of some kind. That would facilitate a better environment in which to study, to sing, to praise God. That smaller groups would encourage us to be more open, have closer relationships even in the local church. What do you think about that? Just can we do a couple little practical things about thinking about being rid of buildings? And I know there are questions can be raised, especially on occasions, how much money some brethren seem to spend on places to meet. But I'm not sure that's the answer. Where are we going to meet? I've met with churches that rented facilities. One church that I have probably shared with you some observations about their experience in Cumming, Georgia, or north side of Atlanta, where they met in a daycare. And it took an extra effort to come and to get the chairs set up and to make sure the classes were set up. But yet that church grew, and it was an exciting time for them, and then they built a building, and then they split. Not because they built the building, but there were attitudes already there, sadly enough. The building wasn't the answer for them to become a church in the community that people might be drawn to. So renting would be okay. I'm not opposed to those kinds of arrangements in a storefront. Or what about even outside, somebody suggests? Not a lot of people are suggesting that, and I'm grateful for that. Our attention spans, which are already frustratingly short, would have a lot of trouble being outside in an environment with the bugs and the wind and the snow and the ice and the humidity and the rain and the cold and the heat and the animals and the airplanes and the helicopters and police cars and ambulances and lawnmowers and all the traffic. I kind of like being somewhere where I don't have to hear all of that and try to pay attention to what we're really doing here together and really get our minds engaged and focusing on what we're doing here. Marlon's helped us do that today, and singing these songs and the comments made at the table help us to be engaged in what we're doing. And all of that's profitable, and I like having less distraction around us, and in our particular environment that seems to be important. Well, sitting in the circle help us? And obviously that would be problematic the larger the church becomes. And even this one particular group is meeting in larger groups. They're not meeting in a circle, but they're in the home environment trying to get people in what they consider more intimate arrangement. I got to smile about that a little bit when I think about let's get us all sitting in a circle. Would that produce better worship? I've got some parents going, please don't do that. Ben and Alyssa back here, they'd have to make sure that Archer's little seat is turned backwards so his face wasn't looking at everybody in the audience, because you can forget, you know, that attention. I don't want that. Or especially if they misbehave a little bit, you don't want old Mrs. Goodbody across the room staring at you like, my children never did that. Why don't you get that child out of here and do something about it, you know? And that would create some anxiety too a little bit. And what about the little one that still hasn't learned to behave, and that's okay, and he's running his car around the chair and the seat and stuff like that. And that way everybody can watch that. And not only that, but everybody can watch the person who's sleeping now. We're going to put the clock in that arrangement, by the way, so people aren't breaking their necks trying to see the clock. You know, I mean, it's just on a practical basis with a little humor behind that. I'm not sure putting everybody in a circle is going to then all of a sudden, just presto, make all of us engage in the words of the song, the words of the teacher, the words of the one leading us in eating the Lord's Supper. Is that the answer? You know, somebody across the aisle and clipping their fingernails and looking at their phone and balancing their checkbook and looking through their purse. You know, all of those kinds of things that somebody has asked me on occasions. Lee, do you see what goes on in the assembly? And sometimes I have, and yes, I have. The question is, how is all of that going to help us focus? How is it going to help us worship? How is it going to help us study with our heart engaged? What's going to help us do that? What's going to help us pay attention to the words and listen to teaching even during this few minutes? Turn over to Luke chapter 4 with me for a moment, please. And I'm not for a moment suggesting that the synagogues are a pattern for assemblies today. But in the 2,000 years ago, there's questions about synagogues. We just don't know. One of the questions about when were they first built, we just don't know that from the research that I've looked at. Somewhere between the Testaments, it's assumed, maybe while the people of God were captive in Babylon and other places, couldn't get to Jerusalem anymore, couldn't get to the temple anymore. So they built these places to meet in so they could come together. And they came together on the Sabbath day. And there was scripture reading, as we know here. And Jesus was there in the synagogue, and he took the scroll given to him. It was Isaiah. And he opened the scroll and he began to read from that scroll. And as he read from it, he then stopped and said a very bold statement, nothing that any of us would ever be able to say. And he says, "Today this is fulfilled in your hearing." He was letting them know that this was happening right in their presence, that the Messiah had come, the servant of God had come. And he was letting them know in a very non-direct way that it was him. Well, that didn't get him very far. In fact, some began to talk, apparently, or think to themselves, "Really? You? You're the little boy we watched grow up here. Your mom and dad, Joseph and Mary, you're the Messiah?" And then Jesus went on to give some instructions that made them extremely uncomfortable, and that's a understatement, because the next thing you know, the same people that had been sitting there in the synagogue, and by the way, evidence from one source that I read said that the benches were along the walls. They didn't sit in pews like this. They would have been sitting in more of a circular arrangement where everybody could have been more engaged. It was apparently, according to this one researcher, that to create some dialogue among the folks. And so even in that environment, after he reads the text, and they were male-led assemblies, by the way. We'll talk a little bit about that later in another lesson. Maybe next week. He instructs them, he reproves them, and the next thing you know, they're taking him out to the edge of the city and got a hillside over there, a bluff maybe up like the Narrows, and they're getting ready to throw him off the edge and say, "We're done with this. We don't want to hear more of this." And my point about all of that is that whatever the seating arrangement in the synagogue was, apparently helped none of those people appreciate what was happening right in their presence. That wasn't the problem. The building wasn't the problem. The seating arrangement wasn't the problem. I hate almost to suggest this, but there's a desire to just eliminate preaching and more group discussion. And I want to tell you something. I like group discussion. I like Bible classes when people bring to the table some serious Bible study. It's obvious that they've spent time reading scripture before they got here, and they bring that to the table and some insight, and I love that. Bible classes should be that. When I think of a passage and Brother Clyde thinks of, "Well, here's another passage," and puts that together, and we begin to see how all of that fits together, and that's a wonderful thing. It reminds me of something I hadn't thought about or hadn't thought about in a while. But one description of the house churches, and I'm getting away from that a little bit because all of these groups are not traditionally and technically house churches, because they are meeting in larger groups together. But one writer said that no sermon, teaching is to be interactive, is typically the descriptive of some of these groups that are not even meeting in larger groups on Sunday, but I have gone to just the smaller groups in every assembly, and they want no sermons in that, no lecturing, nobody standing up, no pulpits, no authoritative position of any particular person. Can I ask you something? Let's get rid of the buildings, and let's sit in a circle. Are you going to study more? Are you going to have something profitable to say in that assembly? Are you going to be spending some time digging into the Word of God? And is it going to help you listen to others, or do you just want the opportunity to talk? And will it help us study the hard things? At some point in that study environment, we'll have to study the hard things. We'll have to wrestle with Matthew 19:9. We'll have to wrestle with 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Eventually, you can try to put it in an informal, comfortable situation as you want, but I'm going to tell you at some point there's going to be some uncomfortableness in what we study. That's okay. But I don't think the seating arrangement will facilitate that very much. I went on a website, this particular local group that has drawn some interest of young folks, and listened to one of the sermons, and it was about Mark chapter 2 and 3 and some outstanding stuff. Good points being made. But the writer, or the speaker, I don't think caught the irony of a particular statement. And what he said was, as he was trying to get the audience engaged, I want you to think about Mark just sitting at the table with you sharing these stories. And it just made you again feel comfortable, like just feel at home. Just imagine Mark sitting around the table, and we're sitting around the table with him, and he's going to start telling us these stories about Jesus. And I like that. But I think the speaker missed the irony of that. He has a Bible and notes standing at a podium, and for about, they had time on there, 36 minutes, addresses the audience. Excuse me? You're still preaching. You're still teaching. Yes, it's in jeans, and yes, it's in a shirt that's hanging out, and it's just comfortable, and it's not in a church building, it's in a ballroom, but still, you're preaching and teaching, standing at a podium. What's the difference? Thought about making that in bigger font, but that's about as big as I could get that on the screen. Can we be practical for a moment, please? Very practical. Our generation may be producing the poorest listeners in the history of the world. People who are unable to focus, to pay attention, and to listen. And I'm not just talking about sermons here. I mean, even on a song or a prayer or comments made at the table or actually spending 5 minutes in contemplative thought about what Jesus did for me for 5 minutes. As I watch somebody smile at one of the little babies as I make that point. And that's okay. That happens. That's real life stuff. But we're not the first poor listeners. The Jews in Babylon were very poor listeners in Ezekiel. They were meeting on the river Chebar. They just weren't very good. The folks in the synagogue at Nazareth weren't very good listeners either. I've been told now that our attention spans just aren't what they used to be. They used to be 30 minutes. They used to be, now they're 20 minutes. And I'm not sure, for some of us it's longer than 60 seconds. Again, I don't want to talk about sermons because I don't want to make this sound like a personal thing. I move beyond that. And I understand that some things just aren't always going to be as ideal as we like. I listened to this sermon, and as I was listening to it, that he made the point to this audience. He says, you know, while I'm speaking, and if I make a point about something that just captures you and God speaks to you about that point, just go ahead and let God take you and in whatever direction that thought leads you. Let God speak to you. Don't feel like you need to listen to every word. I think you probably don't have to tell everybody that. They don't need that help. But anyway, you know, I just thought, really? It's hard to have a one-on-one conversation with some people today, isn't it? Excuse me, I need to check this text. Wait a minute, I got a call. Can I take this for a minute, please? I'm checking my email today. I'll get right back to you. As I hear that vibrate, my mail just came in. yeah, I'm going to just step off on the edge and just jump off and hang myself. Parents, once you think about something, I'm thinking about, go ahead. Years ago, an older preacher gave me a book by John Roseman called A Six-Point Plan to Raising Healthy, Happy Kids. This is a preacher that you all would think a lot of. Very practical. And he makes some pretty strong observations about our young people and our children. And he believes that the attention spans begin to drop drastically at the advent of television and produce some thoughts that back that up. If you go on a website now and Google John Roseman, you'll find some of the quotes from the book. And I found this one that he made. He said, keep television and other electronic media out of your child's life until your child has learned to read well and is self-entertaining. The research is clear that electronic media shortens attention span, interferes with the development of certain critical thinking skills. He goes on. And I think he's right. And I just want you to, I'm thinking about going ahead and buying a copy, so get ready, a couple families here. I'm going to give you a free copy of that. But it's good stuff. But I think it's practically saying to us that maybe we are missing something. Maybe some of these days, one of these days, this old fundamental, practical, old fogey worship services sitting in pews like this is outdated because we can't practically pay attention to a sermon that's going to be 30 minutes or an assembly for an hour. And I wonder if we're just not helping ourselves and we're not helping our kids develop. In fact, we may, and it's not the content. It's not the content of being watched, by the way. It's just the practice of watching it itself is detrimental to a child's development, according to this study and research. And I won't go into all the reasons why, but he does. I'm hearing people are visual learners. And I hear that. Describe one of my children that way. And I think some of that's a product of our culture. And I want to tell you something. I like word pictures. I like pictures, and they help us see and appreciate things. But I've come to the conclusion that every time I need to really listen to somebody, need to listen to my parents, to a teacher, to a policeman, to a preacher, to a boss, I don't think they need to draw a picture and put music to it. I think I can learn to really just listen to them out of respect for the word's sake itself. Because they are speaking, I want to listen. We do need to paint better word pictures. We need to teach with stories and illustrations. Jesus did that, and we need to do that. But let's make sure that some of those stories and illustrations make us on occasions feel terribly uncomfortable and actually lead to some change in behavior in our lives. The problem, folks, is that we're distracted by the world and sometimes have no intentions of making any real changes. Like a child looking at a parent with this look on their face thinking, go ahead, when you get done, I'm going to go ahead and do what I was doing anyway. Rearrange the seats? I don't think so. Smaller gatherings, is that the answer? What we do in church, or in house church, one website proclaimed, we worship together. We pray for the world, the community, and each other. We share our thoughts, our joys, our struggles, our victories, our doubts, etc. Excuse me, we read and discuss the Bible. We listen to teaching from the Bible, and we develop friendships. And I got to tell you, folks, I read that and I thought, why can't we, don't we do that here? I mean, I really think we do. Do I need to meet in a smaller group to get that done? Absolutely not. If we can put that kind of mindset in the heart of every Christian, we can do that right here, even in our present arrangements. Are these really the answer to our spiritual problems, our challenges? It's just cosmetically changing the places where we meet and changing the seating arrangement. This is not typical, but And I understand that. And I'm not saying this about every house church. Please understand me. But one fellow said he visited a house church in the early 90s. He says, and I quote, "It was run by a group of disgruntles whose happiness came from the fact that they met in a living room and not a sanctuary, on a sofa and not a pew. They were like kids staying away from school, hiding out, proud of their boldness to leave. And yet in all their freedom, they managed only to move the church service from a building to a house. Not much else had changed, only the location." And sometimes that will be the truth. In a couple of these places, a couple of these websites, one site said, "We believe the practice of home-based churches as depicted in the book of Acts and Paul's letters is normal Christianity." And then another one said, "First, we recognize that this structure for church or assembling is the one that is the most prevalent and clearly demonstrated in the New Testament, the home church environment." And I will tell you, there are passages that talk about churches in the homes of people like Priscilla and Aquila. I'm not sure that necessarily means, I think that passage needs some study. I'm not sure that means that's where they were meeting. I don't think that's absolutely 100% dogmatic truth about that. I think it can be referring to the people that are part of the church, the Christians that live in that home. I may be wrong about that. And even if those passages do talk about the church in that city meeting in the homes of Priscilla and Aquila and other places, even if that's the case, I still think there's other examples. The Christians in Ephesus met in a school, Acts 19, verse number 9. I've told you before, as a kid, we met in the school that I went to school with in grade school, and I thought that was pretty cool. But anyway, I was just a kid. The same room that I was going to eat lunch with in on Monday and play basketball in on Monday, worship God together on Sunday. We worship God together on Sunday. I'm not sure the Corinthians were meeting in a house when I infer from the passage in 1 Corinthians 11:22 that Paul told them about eating the Lord's Supper, and he said, "Don't you have houses to eat in?" And yet I know a church could still have that problem meeting in a house. If meeting in homes in the first century was normal Christianity, if it was the clearly demonstrated structure of local churches in the New Testament, then I want to ask you three questions. Then why did New Testament churches still have Ananias and Sapphira's, Demas's, Jezebel's, elders who taught perverse things, false teachers, and Diotrephes? I think there's this euphoric, this utopia idea that the way we're doing it's wrong, and there's a better way of doing it, and if we do it the better way, it is going to create better people by changing the building, getting out of the buildings, and changing the pew arrangements, if we have any pews at all. All right, let's go back to the first century, and let's say they were meeting in homes in the very way that God expected them to meet in. Churches still had to deal with a lying couple, a Jezebel and her false teachings and her immorality. Elders who Paul, with heart broken, said were going to rise up and teach perverse things, drawing away disciples. And a Diotrephes in 3 John who just had to have his way. And if it wasn't his way, then it was the highway. You still have to deal with that. And if the church at Corinth met in the home, boy, that sure straightened out all their problems. That made them the most spiritual-minded group of people in the first century. Really? Read 1 Corinthians and see if that's the truth. Still had a brother who had his father's wife, had women that were out of line, Lord's Supper was a mess, and all of that had to be corrected. And if they were meeting in a home and sitting in a circle and looking at each other, evidently that didn't help. Seating arrangements, more informal situations are going to help us. And finally, can you tell me why Jesus had some things to say to the churches in Asia? If the church at Ephesus had it right, where they were meeting was ideal, the seating arrangements were ideal, they left their first love. If the church at Laodicea had it all right, they became lukewarm. If the church of Sardis had all of that right, they were dead. Church buildings and seating arrangements are not our greatest problem, and they're not the cause of our problems. Tony Mock, gospel preacher, in some material he put together for a college class in Auburn, Alabama, said, "I was once told you cannot properly worship looking at the back of somebody's head." And he went on to say, and I think rightfully so, it's not the arrangements of the seats that is so critical, but the arrangement of the heart. And that's where we got to keep coming back to. While these fads and these innovations and these ideas, and not, some of which aren't all wrong, and I'll address a couple of those, if God allows, next Sunday. But let's make sure we see the bigger picture. Jesus says, "Do you have a heart for me? He that has an ear, has ears, let him hear. Listen to me," he says. And that's what God's calling us to do. I hope this has helped. I hope it's not just young people, but it does seem to be. And I'll address a little bit more of that next week about why it seems to be that case and why there's sometimes young folks may have some legitimate concerns. But I'm just trying to address that this is not the answer. Legitimate concerns may be legitimate, hopefully it's the case, but they need to be addressed in some other way. We can help you today think about Jesus more carefully and not be so distracted by all the stuff of the world. We'd like to help you focus on Him, and we'd like to sing an invitation song to invite you to come to Him and really let Him be the person who fills your heart. And let Him be the person who guides you the rest of your life and become the person that you ought to be and can be and grow to be. And maybe a day you want to start by becoming a Christian. We'd like to help you do that. We can help in any other way. Please come as we stand and sing.